Hello and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires podcast. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm joined by my brother, Max. Max, we just finished another great game of the World Cup, Croatia v. Denmark. Before we talk about that, let's talk a little bit about what has happened this week. No Portugal, no Germany, no Spain, no Argentina. Brave new world that doesn't have such people in it. How are you feeling?
I find it really intriguing. I was actually going to ask you, with those teams out, mm-hmm. Argentina, Spain, Germany, Portugal, mm-hmm. What players do you actually feel sorry for on those teams?
I guess, I think most people feel badly for Messi, right? Mm-hmm. I think that perfectly sums up that attitude.
What's that? Sorry, I started to talk over you. Go complete your thoughts, sorry.
No, I just think that kind of sums it up. Like, I think I'm supposed to feel bad for Messi, right?
I think yes, but I also feel like Argentina in me shifted into the kind of like unlikable zone.
Yes.
With the conflict with their manager, plus the kind of way they played, mm-hmm. where they were, Messi was kind of trying to do everything, and it was just like...
They were chippy. There were some cynical fouls. They weren't really enjoyable.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't necessarily feel bad for Messi in that, like, it looked like they were like, okay, we're going to have Messi carry us. And it just seemed like, well, maybe if he and they took a different approach of not trying to play a false nine or not trying to do this or that, like... Some of that seems to have fallen on like choices that Messi and his teammates made themselves. So yeah. It makes me less likely to feel bad for them.
Yeah, I guess, I feel bad for all the players just as human beings, but truly I think, most of these people will be fine. It's different when a Serbia goes out who are maybe like a dark horse and Milinkovic-Savic is such a great player that he doesn't get more of a time to sort of showcase his own talent. And most of the players on these teams are fine. Not that Milinkovic-Savic isn't going to have like a stellar career, but I feel worse for the smaller teams if not once in a generation talent pool, at least maybe a twice in a generation talent pool that they're not able to capitalize it. But I do not feel bad for the major nations.
Okay, I was going to say I think you can make an argument to feel bad for Spain, mm-hmm. because it seems like maybe it's because they just played Russia and it's hard to root for Russia for various complicated reasons. Mm-hmm. But,
Let's talk about that game.
Yeah, I think that, like, well, to complete my thought, I think that maybe you can feel kind of bad for them because they've got some players who I think are very likable, like Iniesta. Mm-hmm. And so it's sad to see him bow out in this way, obviously. But you can feel a little bit like they got the short end of the stick.
Yes.
The last minute managerial change, all that stuff seems to have genuinely screwed up Spain. Mm-hmm. And they didn't seem able to make a tactical adjustment. I feel like they ultimately at the end of the day, it is the players who play, but it did seem like they were missed. They should be so much better. And it just seems like just a waste of them if indeed the managerial chaos caused them to play worse or to not be able to make the changes to solve Russia and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, playing the hosts is always tricky too, especially when they're Russian. And it's sort of one of those things, like, I have no joy watching Russia win. I don't have, like, the history of authoritarian governments hosting the cup and winning it. It's well documented and sort of like, everyone's retweeting the same Men in Blazers thing right now, but it's true. I mean, I don't know, doping scandal of Russian athletics, the clear penalty that was denied in extra time. I don't know. I don't like the Russian team. I hope they don't go far, but they've already way out, sort of outperformed anybody's expectations, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, to me, like, it seemed like Spain was, maybe it was, like, Russia had... It was packing all their guys into the box, and Spain was just passing around the boxes. Everybody talked about Spain had 1,000 passes completed, mm-hmm. but were able to do almost nothing. And it seemed that the only time they looked like capable and dangerous was by doing set plays. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed that like Spain was unable to really kind of flip the switch and start thinking about playing differently. And then maybe that comes down from, like I was saying, like a managerial / players not being on the same page. But maybe that was also just them not adjusting to like a dirty game plan that Russia executed very well.
Yeah,
and I don't like saying dirty because I kind of hate that sort of like tiered way of talking about soccer. Like I hated seeing people talk about kind of Uruguay that way too, being sort of like, oh, this is like, you know, shithouse tactics, that kind of stuff. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
like,
that's because
generally the way lots of great teams play. So
yeah, and they're not going to call it Argentina for using those same tactics or Brazil for using those same tactics, and it seems to be sort of like nationalistic, and yeah, it really makes me uncomfortable because like Brazil also have been playing really poorly and very negatively. And and as much as they've complained about the treatment that Neymar has been getting, they've also been dishing it out as well.
Yeah, so did you have any takeaways from the Spain-Russia game besides, as you said, not wanting to talk about political other kinds of things surrounding Russia?
It just seems like, I mean, this is just how a worse team sets up against a better opponent with a lot of attacking prowess, is that they're just going to fill the box. And... yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a boring game. And I was, I don't know. Even the penalty shootout I wasn't thrilled about. But no, I don't have anything smart to say. I was just kind of bummed out. I think obviously it's, you know, still my voice. I'm kind of bitter about it.
Yeah, let's not waste our time talking about the crappy game then.
No worries. Let's talk a little bit about France versus Argentina, which was not a crappy game. It was an amazing game.
It really was.
Yeah. I said it to you when we were watching, but if that would have been the final, everyone would have been happy. Like, yeah. That's just so entertaining.
Absolutely. It's hard even to know where to start to talk about that game because there were so many goals.
Yeah.
Obviously, 7 goals. France takes the early lead. Argentina comes back to tie, then take the lead. Then France scores a bunch of unanswered goals until Argentina gets one back. And, you know, like, just all that in and of itself, that back and forth game, just crazy. And yet at the same time, it did feel like France was kind of in control for so much of the game. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other layer to it too, where everyone is, there's Messi gone, there's Mbappe rising.
Yeah.
There's, you know, like this becoming a hype train game for Mbappe. Not that he needs it, but just everyone feeling the need. I think it seems like I see on Twitter, everyone feeling the need to just talk about how great Mbappe is and to be like, oh, now he, you know, joins. It seems with all these jokes about him being as good as Messi or Ronaldo or that kind of thing or whatever.
He's got a ways to go.
He's got a ways to go, but it seems like, you know, like there's lots of these cheeky things where it's like, you know, it's like a picture of him and Ronaldo or, you know, like that kind of thing. And there people are making puns about or jokes about that from that way or whatever. Yeah. Like, oh, one of the best players in the world with this guy from Portugal or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that kind of dumb thing. Anyway, so.
I mean, I will say, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think that one thing to think about with Argentina, Portugal, and France, if we're saying like Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe, like France doesn't play through Mbappe. Like France is an actual team, and everyone on that team seems to know what their role is. They're not just hoofing it up to Griezmann and asking him to create something. They're not doing that with any of their players. They're probably, I mean, I would say that Spain is also a real team, but they just, you know, they got unlucky today, and maybe they didn't have sort of like the attacking composure to create a chance, even though they had the ball. It seemed like the vast majority of the time, but anyways,
France really looked like they grew up and played really well. I think that, you know, like, it's hard to know like who gave like the best performance. Obviously Mbappe was terrific, but really, like, you know, Pogba played the kind of game that like, we were just like, wow, Pogba gets so much hate. He draws so much attention to himself being, you know, the world's most expensive player or whatever. And, you know, that invites a lot of criticism and that kind of thing. And people are always like quick to jump on him anytime he has like a subpar or average game. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like there's this kind of like surrounding narrative around Pogba about that kind of stuff. Like, does he live up to expectations? Does he really like step up? That kind of thing. And he's really been doing that for France. And that was such a dominant game in the midfield. It was just unbelievable. I mean, like, yeah, he was just bossing people around, and he wasn't doing it. And like, he did a couple like really cool offensive things, but like for the most part, it was just like, I mean, how do you get through that French midfield? He was just awesome.
Watching people play up to their sort of potential. Like, I take no joy in watching Pogba fail. I don't care if he's the most expensive player. I don't care if, you know, he's like maybe annoying. I don't find him that annoying, or I think people sort of misjudge his personality, but I love watching him play.
Yeah, it seemed they, as a team, France just they really knew their roles and played really well. And as you said, the team wasn't built around Mbappe. You know, it seemed maybe built around Giroud slightly, and
I
which is interesting.
love Giroud.
And yeah, the just quality in every spot that was playing up a level into that system.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the Pavard goal,
Yeah.
which is like the greatest replay of a goal we've ever seen, maybe. Like, I could watch that replay all day.
It is unbelievable. If that's like
Unbelievable.
CGI good.
Yeah,
It's like bend it like Beckham stuff.
I just watched Bend It Like Beckham, and I can tell you that there's nothing about that movie that is quality. In the last scene, the male romantic lead has clearly just come from getting his eyebrows waxed, and his like brows are all puffy and red. It's pretty great.
Did you notice that, or did your wife?
My wife noticed it as I was thinking it to myself, so
Okay, not that I'm, you know, calling you out for heteronormative things or whatever, but just curious.
Now my brows are definitely unkempt.
So now here's like a I realize this is sort of a hot take thing, but like, you know, like, oh yeah, what a great game, you know, 4-3, and yet it seems like such a dominant game from France, and yet
They gave him 3 goals.
they still gave up 3 goals.
Yeah.
And one of France's goals was an absolute, like, once in a lifetime goal.
Yeah.
So if Pavard doesn't hit that, and it's 3-3,
Yeah, I think, I mean,
the narrative's completely different. Like, how is that possible? You know,
well,
it just
yeah.
seems like the game it was on such a fine, it feels at the end of the day on such a fine margin, even though it also felt that France was so dominant. Maybe it's because, you know, Argentina got that late goal to make it 4-3 instead of just 4-2, but still, France conceded 3 goals.
Yeah, I wonder if it was just sort of watching Argentina play and how easily they got frustrated by France's defense, and just as we're seeing the game play out, it was clear that France was on another level and that Argentina was doing the same thing over and over again, just couldn't figure out a way to move forward. And it, I mean, like, it had as much to do with France as it did with just Argentina not knowing their best system and not knowing how to create chances.
Yeah, I think that is what it is. Seeing like their system in play, seeing them go through these different options, and as you said, not relying necessarily on Mbappe or any one player,
Yeah, well, I mean, now they have Uruguay to look forward to. We watched the Uruguay-Portugal game, the most handsome display of sportsmanship of all time when Ronaldo helped Cavani off the field. It's incredible. I'm so in love with Cavani. I think that guy is just so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the kind of handsomeness where like women get more than I get. I mean, in the sense that like some of my female friends, you know, like heterosexual female friends will be like, "Oh yeah, that guy's really handsome," and I'm like, it doesn't quite gel in my brain. I'm like, I can see why you'd think he's handsome, but I can, it's, you know what I mean, like that kind of extra, you know, womanly handsomeness that doesn't quite have a like a doesn't qu cause my like neurons to fire in the same way.
Cavani could
But
definitely be like a glam rock star.
yeah,
Yeah.
God, he's got a chin like a like a pile of bricks. It's unbelievable, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, apart from, let's look at
I
some.
think his handsomeness is like he's somewhat like looks like Neanderthalic, but in like a exquisite way.
I think I don't want to add anything to that. I think that's a really beautiful point.
Okay.
Great.
Any yeah.
I want to run down some stats with you. How many? So I heard this on another podcast about sort of like the statistical advantage that Portugal had, and I was sort of shocked when I actually looked into it. How many shots do you think Portugal had in that game?
Oh, I have no idea. I feel like I've lived like 10 World Cup years in the last 2 days. It's like I just feel like it's, I don't know, do you feel this way? There's just so much stuff going on, and
I'm exhausted.
yeah.
No, Portugal had 20 shots to Uruguay's 5. Portugal had 68% of the possession. Portugal had 544 passes versus Uruguay's 273. Portugal had 86% pass accuracy against Uruguay's 67. Portugal had 10 corners. Uruguay only had 2. That's remarkable because I didn't feel like I watched that game. I feel like I watched a game that was Uruguay had Portugal kind of figured out.
Yeah, I wonder if that's like, and if I was like savvier when it came to soccer stats, I might have a better understanding of this. But I wonder if some of that is like the fact that Uruguay got their second goal on like whatever the 60 something minute, and then could be a little bit more defensive, and then Portugal, and then they could sit back a little bit, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and especially like with Cavani getting injured and taken off for one like the 70 something minute, I can't quite remember, but. To like that kind of affecting those like end of the game cumulative stats. Whereas if you pause the game at the 63rd minute and looked at the stats, they might look a little different.
Yeah.
And Uruguay also just looked so their strategy. I think of having Luis Suarez just like be a one man pressing machine, and like the kind of defense they played, it just never felt like. Portugal was getting good shots and that kind of thing. Because, yeah, like, looking at the stats now, like, Portugal had 20 shots, but only 5 on target.
Yeah.
Whereas Uruguay had 5 shots and 3 on target. Granted, I mean, it's not a ton of shots on target, but still, you felt like that Uruguay was so organized on defense that even when, you know, Portugal got close or would like, turn a corner kick, then like Cavani was doing great work inside the box, like clearing things, and just Uruguay just seemed so capable of clearing. And then the thing I think also that made me feel like they were in control is like the hold-up play was like phenomenal, and Suarez was just so good at maintaining possession. And then like so that like Uruguay didn't feel like one of those teams that was just bunkering and like withstanding shots. It felt like when they would clear the ball, they could hold on to it, and they always had like some breathing room.
That's a good point. I don't know, what's your opinion? Do you think Uruguay or France is going to go through?
I don't know, man.
Uruguay have not been booked this World Cup.
Yeah, that's the thing. Uruguay, like, man, they've really grown on me as a team. I know, like, we talked about this offline, but, like, Suarez is the least likable player.
Yes.
And I told you that, like, if Suarez was just a little bit likable, he would be so likable.
Yeah, the whole team would be really likable.
Because he works so hard. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like a weird mismatch of player of like player type personality.
Yeah.
He's like such a like conniving cheater and dirty player who also seems to put in the most honest shift of anyone.
Yeah.
And doing so from like the most prima donna position. It's like how he's just the kind of things that you're not used to seeing together in a player. I can't think of another person quite like that, you know. It would be like if maybe LeBron is kind of like that, whereas LeBron's always doing those like flailing kind of stuff.
Oh yeah,
that no, kind of thing. I never saw like Jordan do that, but Jordan was also obviously like a kind of a cheater and a conniver.
Yes, gamesmanship is what they call it when the person is likable. But yeah, I guess the only person that comes to mind is Tony Soprano. clearly not an athlete, but let's I don't know
about Uruguay. Like, they've really grown on me as a team. Like I was saying, they seem so technically competent. You said they haven't been booked. They've only given up a single goal. They're great in possession. They don't seem to be panicked, and they seem to be well organized. There's really a lot to like about the way they play, even if they have this reputation of being like a negative team in some way. They actually like are way more way more competent, way more technically gifted, and way more just like seemingly calm and in control than you would expect for a team that everyone talks about as being sort of shithouse or negative or that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they have a chance against France, but I feel like France is just like riding a wave right now, and I wouldn't want to bet against them.
I wouldn't want to bet against France either, but man, that would be sweet.
Yeah.
It is kind of the year of the giant killers, so
yeah, that's true. Oh man, here I'm not gonna get involved in any sort of like fantasizing about semifinal situations. Let's move on to the game we just finished, which is Croatia v Denmark. What a shootout! Holy crap!
Yeah,
that was like a perfect shootout.
It was, yeah, yeah. I think because so obviously before we even talk about the shootout, we have to talk about the Modric penalty that Schmeichel saved, where you just like you see Modric, the camera's on him. He just looks, I mean, granted, Modric always looks like he hasn't slept a week and is coming off of like some sort of electronic dance music festival where he took too much of something or something like that. He just looks so strung out.
Yeah, yeah.
But he looked so exhausted slash nervous slash uncomfortable before that penalty kick. And obviously Schmeichel saved it. And then with Eriksen taking the first penalty for Denmark and then getting immediately saved, it was just like this sudden like swing in the, not, I hate the moment using the term momentum, but yeah, a sudden swing in my expectations as a fan that yes, set up everything, because you're coming into it, you're like, you're thinking like, oh my god, Croatia has no chance.
Yeah.
And then immediately a save against like the best player on Denmark was, it was just like, oh my god, like anything can happen. And that, yeah, and that's exactly the formula that the rest of the shootout went through.
Yeah, I mean, how many penalties were saved on each side? Two? I don't know. I mean, not on each side.
I just saw the stat somewhere that it was the most saves in a shootout, I think. So.
Oh, God. I'm, like, still sweating right now.
It was, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it should be said that Croatia, Denmark gave Croatia a lot more trouble than people expected.
Sorry to cut you off. It was so good because what was actually happening was back and forth saves.
Yeah.
It was like the balance of power has shifted. Sometimes you feel like when you're watching a penalty shootout, that's like, oh, you know, like this team's got the advantage, they just got to keep not making mistakes. And then you're like, oh, they made a mistake. In this shootout, it didn't seem like anyone was making mistakes. What was actually happening was like the keepers were just playing phenomenally. And yeah, so like they were in control. And it was like whether or not this keeper could make that save. And then the whole shootout was about them, it seemed like. And that was like just so awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, like, just like what you said, where Croatia had this sort of fragility after the missed Modric penalty, to go into a penalty shootout and pull it out was really, really impressive.
What did you think about Modric's second penalty during the shootout where he just hit it straight down the middle after a little hesitation?
Oh my god, he got so lucky. It was like it seemed like it was an inch away from Schmeichel's toes. Like it just seemed like, I don't know if he meant to do that. He looked, I don't know. It's hard. Modric is a hard guy to read. So yeah but I just felt like he got lucky.
I was poking fun of his appearance. You know, I was poking fun at that, but. And I don't mean to. I don't like to make fun of the way people look, but yeah, he does seem like hard to read in that sense, where he always looks kind of nervous and uncomfortable, but then he just always does kind of brilliant things. Mm-hmm. He seems to have like be gifted in the sense where you just can't even understand sort of what's going through his brain and how he plays. So mm-hmm. Yeah, impossible to read.
Yeah, if Woody Allen made a movie about soccer, Modric would be the Woody Allen character. all right, let's talk a little bit about the games coming up tomorrow.
If Scorsese made one, who would be the De Niro?
Luis Suarez, man.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like unlikable, talented gangster who's just like his. Yeah, yeah, totally. I was thinking about that when that's why I said Tony Soprano. But anyways, I want to talk about Mexico v Brazil. What do you think needs to happen in order for Mexico to win?
Well, first of all, Chicharito needs to bleach his hair. that's going to be key.
Yeah.
But let's actually, in all seriousness, get back to the hair situation mm-hmm. later on. But I don't know. I mean, you know, like what Mexico has got going for them right now is that they look good on the break and they've got phenomenal goalkeeping. And do you think that playing to those strengths is going to be enough?
Well, I think that Brazil are like what we've seen with a lot of the giants in this tournament so far, are fragile mentally. I think that you're going to, like, Mexico needs to CONCACAF Neymar, and Neymar is a baby. Like, he's going to whine, he's going to complain. He's not getting the protection that he wants, and I don't think he's going to get it against Mexico. I don't see why it would be any different this game than the games leading up to this point.
There have been so few fouls called, and in general, and so Neymar's, you know, complaining or whatever, limping off the pitch during training, you know, saw that kind of stuff too, and then saying that too many tackles on him from the last game, that kind of stuff. And but in general, like, it's been kind of interesting. There have been so few fouls called, and maybe that's getting lost in the sort of the other parts of the officiating that have been the front page news, the stuff about VAR and that kind of thing. That's really interesting. Maybe that's one of the things that's kind of opening things up for lower level teams, in a sense, is that, like, star players are used to getting protected and they're not getting protected as much. But yeah. I don't know. That's pure speculation. I shouldn't go down that road.
It's all right. I mean, I guess it depends on – so I think if Brazil has sort of noticed how uncomfortable Mexico has looked when teams allow them to have the ball, like, Sweden just kind of was like, yeah, okay, try and create a shot. But, like, go for it. We're going to have eight defenders and you're going to create nothing. But I don't think Brazil can play that negatively. I think like, they have a brand that they always need to sort of be faithful to. So I think Brazil, if they're going to try and go forward, that kind of plays into Eltree's system of counterattacking. I mean, obviously it's not going to be that simple, but I think, like, Brazil's going to be like, oh yeah, we're motherfucking Brazil. Like, let's give it to these guys. And then Mexico, who has more speed than Brazil and plays beautiful counterattacking soccer, I think it's possible that they're going to surprise them. I think that's exactly what needs to happen. Mexico's ability to create shots on goal when they're given possession has not impressed me. So I think it'll have to be counterattacking like it was in the group stage.
Do you think there's a chance that Mexico is going to improve in this game, where just kind of like they had that just stinker of a game against Sweden, and now, like, do you think they have, like, that they're not just that they're going to bounce back, but just more games in the, because there are more games in the World Cup, they've gone deeper, they're gelling a little bit more, that kind of thing? Do you think there's a chance that they play up a little bit and they work out some of that, those issues about being comfortable in possession, that sort of stuff?
I mean, I don't think they'll work it out completely, but I do think that Mexico is more of a team than Brazil right now. I think Brazil are doing the same thing that Argentina did. I think Brazil is doing the same thing that Portugal did. Like, they're trying to play through people who are getting double and triple coverage, and it's not working.
If Marcelo is injured, I know he came off and said, oh, it's nothing big. I don't know.
I think it's possible that Mexico will improve. I don't really know game to game how much you can. I mean, the World Cup is so fucking weird. You know, it's like these teams aren't really teams. They're sort of together a month before the start of the tournament, and it seems like they're learning as they go along. And yeah, the deeper you get into the tournament, the more you develop this sort of team identity. So yeah, I mean, they will be improved from Sweden, and they face some adversity now. But I don't see them suddenly being able to, like, create chances from, I don't know, because, like, from, like, the top of the box, like, the last game where they were just kind of, like, crisscrossing back and forth, and, like, any small opening, you know, someone would unleash a shot and it'd go way wide. So, I don't know. I'm not confident in Mexico's ability to improve that much.
Yeah, they are really trigger-happy when it comes to taking a shot.
Yeah.
And at some point, you have to wonder, like, I think we see it sort of normatively. In other words, we say, like, we see that happening. We think, oh, that's not good, or that's bad, or like, oh, they need to change that. But on the other hand, maybe the simplest, dumbest way of explaining is, like, is that how Juan Carlos Osorio wants them to play? Because if they're just firing shots, like, I mean, I know that's not really a great strategy, but it does seem like that's, like, their tendency. I don't know if that's the players or if that's, like, if that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, they also could be, like, they don't really have, like, a great aerial heading threat. So, like, balls into the box, especially against Sweden, who are kind of, like, a bigger team. Like, maybe that's not going to be effective, but against Brazil, maybe it's a more favorable matchup. So, I don't know. I think it's possible for Mexico to win, and I will be hoping and praying that that comes to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, do you have any hot takes on any of the round of 16 games? Belgium versus Japan, Sweden versus Switzerland, Colombia versus England?
Not really. I mean, I still think with England, you know, like, hasn't really. We have. I feel like I talked about this before, but England, we haven't. I don't think we've seen the real England yet, in a way where you feel like, oh, it's England against a good team, playing their first team. And we haven't really seen that. They've had kind of walk in the park games, and then obviously put up a lesser lineup against Belgium. And it's like, well, do we even really know who they are? Will their kind of like really well orchestrated set pieces continue to provide them with buckets of goals when they play a better team? Will the sort of Kyle Walker, whatever position he plays, strategy continue to hold up against a better team? So that's something that I am, you know, would be watching for in that game and not 100% sold on. Yeah, so that of those teams, that's the only like real kind of hot take I'm ready to offer.
Yeah, I feel like the most English sort of scenario I can imagine is England beating Colombia, Sweden beating Switzerland, and then England losing to Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to make it extra painful for them. But I don't really have. I mean, like, I think Belgium will beat Japan. I don't know what to think about the Sweden Switzerland. I think I'm kind of rooting for Sweden, just as underdogs. And I think, you know, James Rodriguez being injured for Colombia, I think England will probably do pretty well. But that's kind of chalk. Let's talk a little bit about the MLS, unless you have something you want to add about the World Cup. I'm still just like, I feel
Just
so
finishing that
full.
thought. Only two teams in the World Cup with MLS players on them right now, Sweden and Mexico. So,
Let's go.
on brand, we got to root for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so real quick, I just want to run through sort of what happened this weekend in MLS. Atlanta 4, Orlando 0. After Jason Kreis's thoughtful breakup letter, the Lions were still unable to right an increasingly rocky ship. Goals from everyone's favorite Gang of Three, Almiron, Martinez, and Barco easily saw off the visitors. FC Dallas 1, Minnesota 0. The real storyline of this game was the fact that 23-year-old midfielder Colin Martin came out as gay an hour before kickoff. Soccer itself felt inconsequential, but Dallas are grinding away. Portland beat Seattle 3-2.
Grinding away is the right thing to say. I mean,
Yeah.
sorry to cut you
No,
off,
no,
but like, yeah, Dallas, well, I guess now they only have five draws, but for a while they were just,
no.
they ground out so many, grinded out so many early results, just by getting draws in the first half of games so far. But anyway, keep going.
Well, yeah, real quick. I think FC Dallas is sort of interesting because they're not blowing anybody out of the water. I don't think anyone's watching FC Dallas highlights like, wow. Like
Yeah.
it's not like an LAFC or like Atlanta or even NYCFC or and but like FC Dallas are tied on points for Sporting KC, top spot in the West, but they have a game in hand, so it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, to just to illustrate this point, yeah, like FC Dallas's goal differential is 8 goals, positive 8 goals, which, you know, is good, but also not mind-blowing. Like there are three Eastern Conference teams with more goals than that, and there are, well, they're the third best,
Yeah.
you know, goal differential in the Western Conference too. So it's like a, yeah, like you're saying, they're doing more with less in some way.
Yeah. All right. Portland beat Seattle 3-2. Columbus defeated Real Salt Lake 2-1. Chicago shocked NYCFC 3-2. And only slightly less shockingly, the Impact beat Kansas City 2-0. Christian Pena hit two in New England's 3-2 victory over DC. I think Yamil Assad also hit 2 goals in that for United. In a battle of the ageless, both Zlatan and Wando hit a brace in San Jose and LA Galaxy's 3-3 draw. And Adoma Diomande became the first LAFC to score a hat trick in a 4-1 win over Philly. He has now scored 7 goals in 5 games, quickly becoming the Bradley Wright Phillips of Southern California. So I think some of the things I've been thinking about as far as MLS is Toronto really have no excuse, seeing as how U.S. men's national team players are not in the cup, and I'm wondering what the psychological hangover that they're dealing with is. Montreal only 1 point out of the playoffs right now. I'm calling it. They're getting in. They're getting in.
Yeah, what is behind the Montreal surge?
I don't know.
Can you surge into seventh place?
Yeah, can you surge into the last seed? That's
is it a surge when you've still given up 9 more goals than you've scored?
Yeah, and like allowed the most shots on your goalie by like 50. It's their defense is just so bad. But then looking at you know the last okay, so they beat Sporting KC 2-0. They beat Orlando City 2-0.
They are the opposite of Dallas. They have had 0 draws this season.
That's insane. I mean, they are. I mean, it might be just because everyone else is like. I don't know. This doesn't actually make sense. I was going to say like there just happen to be a lot worse teams than them this year. But I don't know what's behind the surge. I haven't watched
That's true.
One of the games in a couple weeks. So.
I think they're in the East with Toronto and DC mm-hmm. United, who have just been so bad.
Mm-hmm.
That and Orlando. So like maybe it's you know some of that. I don't even know if that's. You know where they've gotten their points from.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a mixture of that and Ignacio Piatti. Like DC, Toronto, and Orlando are terrible, terrible teams. Philly not having a great year, and those are the only teams below them. Ignacio Piatti scores goals and creates goals. With that Ignacio Piatti, I see Montreal Impact hovering around the DC United zone. But I don't want to talk too much shit about the Impact because I'm overjoyed that they're doing well. But we should talk about DC United and Wayne Rooney.
Yeah. Just to like make a meta comment, yeah, it's like nothing's going on MLS. Just a first openly gay player, Wayne Rooney coming to DC United,
yeah,
all sorts of stuff. It's just
yeah.
Bananas.
It's a new player just scored 7 goals in 5 games for LAFC. It's like how do you think Zlatan Ibrahimovic feels when he looks at Diamande and he's just like, oh man, like
yeah. I mean, well, he would probably tell you that he doesn't look at Diamande, so
yeah. Lies. Well, yeah, real quick, how many goals do you think Zlatan Ibrahimovic has scored since he's come to the MLS?
5?
9.
Whoa.
That's pretty good. 9 goals in 12 games played and 9 games started, so.
I was way off.
Yeah. 9. Pretty good showing. It's a shame that they're such a terrible team.
Yeah. Man. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
and a lot of that's come recently. So yeah. Do you have any sense of that? Has Galaxy sort of like kind of figured out a little bit better system around him or something like that?
Well, they definitely have, like, if not shot up the rankings, steadily climbed up the rankings. Like right now they're in 8th, 2 points behind 6th place Vancouver. So it's possible. I think they need to make the playoffs this year. I think them not making the playoffs and having Zlatan, it would just be like one of the biggest crimes of the season. But I don't really have a sense of how they've changed their system. But, you know, the MLS is the kind of league where one great individual talent like Piatti for Montreal can change the fate of your season more so than in other leagues. Like one great player on a Premier League team isn't the difference between last and, you know, 10th.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, it will rank. I don't know how to gracefully transition to Wayne Rooney, but will he be one of those great players for DC United?
You know that I'm skeptical about him, but yeah, I think it's a really interesting. I think he's kind of like it's a really interesting like A/B test or like controlled experiment in a sense, because you're kind of lifting and dropping this player from the Premier League, who's like in the bottom half of. Talent right now, but who has some exceptional things about him which don't make up for the other issues that he has as a player, his kind of like his legs falling apart as he's aged and that kind of stuff, but he's got so much skill. So dropping him into the MLS, I'm really actually just mostly curious about it as an experiment, like, because in other words, if he dominates MLS, it shows kind of the that skill really can, like, skill is could really be improved in MLS, and that, like, in some ways he's able to make eat his bread from doing that kind of stuff, which he can't get away with in other leagues because he doesn't have the athleticism anymore to compete in other leagues. But on the other hand, if he just gets chewed up and spit out because he can't keep pace with MLS, which is a kind of a fast-paced ping pong crazy league as we've talked about, then it's I'm not sure if there's anything we can quite learn from that, but that maybe that MLS just can't really be like a retirement league, as people often, disparage it for being, because the pace of the game has picked up. So I'm really curious to see how that, if we can learn anything from seeing how he plays, compared to how he has been playing and how he's been forced to play in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what position he's going to play. I think, is he going to play something? Why not? I mean, like Everton used him in a number of roles, but it seems like for the most part at Everton in his later career at Man United, he was sort of dropping deeper and deeper and deeper and trying to create something. But I don't know if he'll play further up for DC United or what the deal is. I don't think
I
he.
see, I see this as a chance for, he probably sees this as as like a chance to reset his ego in a bad sense, where like, as you said, he kept moving back and back and back for United and then for Everton as well. And so he was kind of, because he couldn't play forward in the attack anymore. And so he ended up kind of coming into these roles where he could still use his like quality distribution to, like, get the ball from the defense and pass it forward, and then switch the field to the wings, to like a player on the wing or something like that. And that was how he was able to like add to the game creatively. And he wasn't able to play 10. He wasn't able to, play in the box really. And so he was kind of forced in this weird like, well, what can you still do? Okay, you can still do this, and we're gonna have you play this position and run as little as possible and just kind of try to distribute and make some creative, like switching the field of play passes. And so I think that Rooney sees this as an opportunity to be like, oh, I can go back to being the man. I can go back to be playing like leading a line, or like being super creative. And so I can't imagine that he sees this as a chance to keep doing the kind of role that he was doing at Man United and Everton, where he was really just forced into that by, and he didn't seem happy there at all. So
Yeah,
I Yeah.
none of that makes me feel hopeful for Mr. Rooney. I mean, he says he's ready for the physicality of the MLS, but they're going to be playing on kind of like B-rate fields for certain games, and players are going to come after him. 3.5 year contract is a long contract for someone with Rooney's legs. So I know he says his first game is going to be on the 14th, so 2 weeks from today or from yesterday.
I'm not super optimistic, but maybe that's because we're kind of MLS shills, and maybe we overrate the quality of the league, and maybe actually that a player like Rooney will contribute a whole lot. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, we ran a poll and 62% of people said they were not excited about it. And that's kind of like that's kind of the split within my own head. It's like 62% of the time I'm just like, this sucks. And then 38% of the time I'm like, okay, I can see some sort of value in it, but no, I'm really not
Also,
pumped.
if here there here's a possible outcome. Rooney struggles for a little bit. What do you do if you're Ben Olsen? Like, can you imagine putting that on a coach and just being like, you have to deal with this foreign player with a huge ego, and you got to tell him like, either we're moving you back to be this, defensive midfield type, or where you can't do the things you want to do on the pitch anymore. Like, it's, I think it's, yeah, there's a lot of ways it could go out of control. I don't think that Rooney's the kind of person who generally listens to his managers, as we've seen. And if you're putting him with a manager who doesn't quite have like the pedigree of some of these other managers that he's had, that I can't imagine, he's going to take that lightly.
I'm shocked that Ben Olsen still has a job. So I'm not really
He
sure
does
that.
look really good in a suit.
He looks great in his suit. I mean, he has the second lowest win percentage of any DC United coach in their history. So I don't know. I mean, I think. I could, t I'm whatever. I'm not gonna speculate on his future. I don't think Ben Olsen
Do you
has.
remember we had a challenge for each other about like who we thought the first coach was going to be fired in MLS?
And we were wrong. So
Yeah,
wrong.
we were so wrong. I forget who we said, but we were wrong.
I said Ben Olsen.
Yeah,
I don't know
we
how he
said
still has his job.
Pavlovich. Yeah,
They both have their jobs.
yeah.
I don't know. You know who the winningest coach in DC United history is? I mean, it's Bruce Arena. It's not that difficult, but I could totally see, Ben Olsen getting the camp, Bruce Arena coming in. Bruce Arena and Wayne Rooney on the same team is just like the
Wow.
worst kind of US fans' wet dream.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in contact with us, tell us your own bad U.S. men's national team dreams. SoftTattooMillionaires@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @SoftTattooMC. Yeah, drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you.